Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Americans are weary of war and wary of war, of U.S. military intervention. You can hear the weariness all over the Syria debate, and yet nobody wants to give a thumbs up to chemical weapons. The White House is making a moral case for action, so let's have that debate. This hour On Point, big philosopher Michael Walzer and big geopolitics thinker Stephen Walt wrestle with the moral and strategic implications of Syria. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you torn? Or not? In which direction are there red lines we can't ignore? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Princeton, New Jersey, is Michael Walzer, one of the country's top political philosophers and professor emeritus at the Institute for Advanced Study. His books include Just and Unjust Wars, Arguing About War, and On Toleration. Michael Walzer, welcome. Thank you very much for being here today.
Hello, Tom. It's good to be here.
And with me in the studio is Stephen Walt, professor of international affairs at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School, author of Taming American Power, The Global Response to U.S. Primacy and the Israel Lobby in U.S. Foreign Policy. Stephen Walt, great to have you here as well.
Nice to be with you.
So, as I understand it, you guys come down on different sides in this question, but it's a great, big, complex question. Michael Walzer, your philosophical work has to do with keeping track of moral lines, even in the midst of complexity. How do you see this question, to go or not to go with a punitive strike on Syria for use of chemical weapons?
Well, look, it's a horrifying civil war with many sides and brutality on all the sides. And I have been against any American intervention in this war for the past 2 years. But I think the massive use of chemical weapons against the civilian population requires an international response. And since there is no organized agency of international society capable of acting, international society is an anarchic society, a kind of state of nature, where the rules have to be enforced by the members. And the principle should be whoever can, should. And in this case, we can, and I think we should act in the limited, specific way that the president has argued for.
What do you say to those who demur and might say, Professor Walzer, 100,000 are dead in Syria over the last couple of years? There was no U.S. intervention during that time. You yourself didn't favor it. What is it about, you know, this particular weapon? I mean, dead is dead.
Yeah, it's been a civil war, not an organized massacre, so like what we saw in Rwanda, say. It's been a civil war. There are lots of casualties on both sides, like in our civil war, which was also brutally fought and which we would not have wanted European intervention. But the ban on the use of chemical weapons, of poison gas, is one of the few effective, relatively effective, constraints on the way wars are fought. And it seems to me very, very important to defend that constraint. We didn't defend it in 1988 when Saddam, the other Ba'athist dictator, used chemical weapons against his own people on a very large scale. If there had been a forceful response then, we might have avoided two wars in the Persian Gulf. I think it's very important that there be a response to this specific act of the Syrian government.
And with that, you suggest in part not simply because of this act, but because you're making a kind of slippery slope argument that if it's not rejected, if it's not punished even, we will have more of it.
I think we will have more of it down the road. Yes, there will be more countries seeking to possess chemical weapons, and there will be more countries considering and maybe using them.
Stephen Walt, you're looking at this same situation. Do you see a moral red line here in the use of these chemical weapons that requires somebody in the what Michael Walzer calls the anarchic international society to step up and do something, or not?
I don't. Chemical weapons are obviously bad, and it's regrettable that the Syrian government appears to have used them. But in my view, they are not. Their use is not sufficient to suddenly alter our calculus and drive us to take action in response. First of all, chemical weapons, although they are often lumped with weapons of mass destruction like nuclear weapons, are actually not that useful in many battlefield situations. And we have this norm against them, but the main reason countries have not used chemical weapons more than roughly a dozen times since 1925 is that they're just not that effective on the battlefield.
And because most, what, they're hard to haul around? They're dangerous to yourself.
They're hard to haul around. The people you're attacking can often take countermeasures. If you use them, other states will use them against you, so you'll gain no military advantage. And therefore, they have tended to be used by governments in extremis or governments that are doing it against those who can't retaliate, for example, as seems to have happened here. But as your conversation with Michael suggested, the fact is tens of thousands of people have already died in this civil war. They have been killed in a variety of very gruesome ways by high explosive, by other means. And to simply focus on the means by which people are dying and not by the mere fact of their deaths, it seems to me, takes us in the wrong direction. It's also worth noting that the United States has turned a blind eye to chemical weapons use in the past. Indeed, we helped Saddam Hussein use chemical weapons. We gave him targeting information because we thought during the Iran-Iraq war that an Iranian victory would be worse than a stalemate or worse than an Iraqi victory. We also didn't pay much attention when Egypt used chemical weapons in the Yemen civil war back in the 1960s. The good news here is that chemical weapons use has been relatively rare, and that's, again, not so much because of this norm, but because in most cases governments are not likely to gain. Finally, if we intervene, there is the possibility that we are going to make a civil war worse. The intervention that interventions tend to prolong civil wars. They tend to increase civilian killings. And we still have no political solution, no military solution to what's happening in Syria. So if our concern is humanitarian, and in my view, it ought to be, we should be focusing on things like relief aid for Syrian refugees and not on what is essentially going to be a rather empty symbolic gesture of lobbing some cruise missiles into Syria. By the way, with no guarantee that this is going to alter Assad's calculations, because remember, he's fighting to stay in power and he'll use whatever means it takes.
What about Michael Walzer's argument that that there is a line crossed when you move from civil war and the fighting that goes along with it has certainly gone on in Syria to, with this kind of weapon, chemical weapons, you're really coming to extermination. I mean, you saw those photographs. It's just blocks of people lying there, dead, just wiped out. That there's a qualitative difference that matters here.
I don't think that's correct. When the United States firebombed Japan during World War II, if you go and look at those scenes, they look equally gruesome, and tens of thousands of people were killed in single bombing raids. The fact is that in most circumstances, high explosive is more lethal than chemical weapons. And again, I'm not defending the use of chemical weapons, but I'm suggesting that to say that they are in some category that immediately mandates that we respond because someone has used them, I think is just misreading what their military effects are.
Michael Walzer, is there some kind of just sentimental commitment to this norm? I mean, think of cluster bombs, think of napalm, think of white phosphorus. There are many gruesome ways for lots of people to die.
Look, I agree with Stephen that poison gas is not effective on the battlefield, but it is very effective off the battlefield. It is indeed a weapon of mass destruction, of mass murder, when directed against civilian populations in cities. And I think it would be a world even less safe than the one we live in if we don't respond to the use of this weapon. Now, I think the firebombing of Tokyo was a war crime. So I don't think the fact that we have done bad things in the past means that we have to sit by and watch other people do bad things now. That makes no sense to me. You have to respond to what is in front of you, and you have to respond as best you can. I can't predict the consequences of the kind of attack that President Obama is planning, which I think will be severe, not minor, on the civil war. It might help to convince Assad that he can't win, which is probably the necessary precondition of any negotiated settlement, and I think we should be pursuing a negotiated settlement. And in order for there to be a negotiated settlement, both sides have to realize that victory is not coming to them.
In supporting intervention, Michael Walzer, are you looking to hold a moral line, in this case on chemical weapons, or to tilt a civil war against one party?
No, I'm not trying to tilt the civil war. I would have wanted to do that during the past 2 years if I thought that was the right thing to do. No, I want to deliver a very strong message about the use of chemical weapons.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We've got a top philosopher and a tough geopolitics thinker with us today, thinking through debating Syria and U.S. intervention there in the aftermath of the use of chemical weapons, 1,400 dead, 400 children, the U.S. government says. Michael Walzer is with us from Princeton, New Jersey, big political philosopher, been thinking about these issues for a long time, author of Just and Unjust Wars, Arguing About War, On Toleration. What's tolerable here? And Stephen Walt joins me in the studio, professor of international affairs at the Harvard Kennedy School, the Belfer Center. They're author of Taming American Power. Michael Walzer says we must go in. The red line has been crossed. There have to be consequences. Stephen Walt saying no. The airwaves have been full of this over the weekend. They will continue to be. All kinds of appearances by the very top figures in our government and all through Congress. Here's Secretary of State John Kerry at a joint news conference with British Foreign Secretary William Hague today.
Think back on those moments of history when large numbers of people have been killed because the world was silent. The Holocaust, Rwanda, other moments are lessons to all of us.
Secretary Kerry raising the Holocaust, raising Rwanda. But here's a one California Congresswoman, Loretta Sanchez, yesterday on Meet the Press, saying her foremost concern is U.S. national security.
It is about national security, and I haven't heard any of our interests. I haven't heard that Assad wants to use the weapons against us. I haven't heard that he wants to use the weapons against our allies, that he's moving them to terrorist organizations.
So national security or no? And what about international norms? Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, not so sure that that should be the job of the U.S. military.
It is not based on defending Americans or our allies. Rather, it is explicitly framed by President Obama, by Secretary Kerry, as a defense of what they call international norms. And I don't think that's the job of our military to be defending amorphous international norms.
A defense of what they call international norms, amorphous international norms. Michael Walzer, are you raising the prospect that we're headed into a period where whatever thin little frail lines we have drawn out of our learning from cruel history go away? It's just a, you know, law of nature?
I think we could be living in a much more, an even more dangerous international society than the one we're currently living in. And I do think it's a matter of American national interest that we don't inhabit a globe where chemical weapons are widely possessed and even occasionally used. I think that is a matter of of national interest as well as of international interest.
I think you'd better define why, given what you just heard from the California congresswoman. She doesn't see it, so make it plain. Why do you think that's in the U.S. interest? Is it in the U.S. national security interest, where she points?
Because the way the world is important to us. We live in this world. If 1,400 Syrians are killed by poison gas, okay. So for the senator from Texas, it's only if 1,400 Americans are killed by poison gas that he's going to think it's a matter of national interest. But it's not a good thing to live in a world where civilians are terrorized and killed by tyrannical regimes, and eventually it will. It will come to us, as it did on 9/11. It will come to us if we accept this kind of a world. And it's not only the Syrian use of weapons. The New York Times had a quite disturbing article over the weekend on how the Syrians got these weapons.
Yes.
With the connivance of other countries, with very, very lax regulatory agencies in Europe and the United States.
And American companies even involved.
And with profit-seeking companies in Europe and the United States that no one tries to control. Yes, the world will be much more dangerous. And the need not only to respond to this specific attack, but to act against the global trade in weapons of this sort.
Stephen Walt, this must weigh on you, this notion of this sort of overall metaculture of the world we live in. If it doesn't have red lines, if it says, oh, chemical gas mass, and on we go. I mean, do you not see a kind of, you know, ambient, not ambient to Syrians who are dead, but, you know, problem with this? Is it a corruption of global norm?
Well, first of all, I think that we're obsessing over the use of chemical weapons, a particular category of weaponry, and not at the larger amount of carnage. The fact is that there has been violence in the world for a long time, and countries occasionally do horrible things to their own people and sometimes to other peoples. And to focus so narrowly on the particular use of a particular type of weapon in this case, I think, is a little bit misleading.
So, but why does it make no difference? Out of the trenches of World War I, people said, "Oh, we cannot do that again." Was that
Governments, there are 190-plus governments in the world, and chemical weapons use has been quite rare since World War I, and it's been quite rare because in most cases it doesn't do governments any good, or they're deterred by the fact that someone would retaliate.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to worry about Syria ever using chemical weapons against the United States because they are deterred by the obvious ways we could retaliate. In fact, if you're worried about the United States and its national security, we would worry more about the chemical weapons getting out of government control, getting into the hands of some of the opposition groups like the Nusra Front that are linked to al-Qaeda.
Or Hezbollah linked to Assad?
Conceivably, although, again, I think Hezbollah is often deterrable in most circumstances. My point being simply that if you're worried about American national security, the only conceivable way chemical weapons use in Syria rebounds on direct American interests is, in fact, if the government collapses, loses control of the weapons, and they fall into the hands of people who might not be deterrable.
How do you know that? We just heard in the news at the top of the hour, Assad saying, yes, there would be some kind of blowback or retaliation he imagined, and he raised the specter of 9/11. I mean, we know that weapons can travel. They can be used by different people in different cases. There's already people who have freaked out about sarin gas here and there around the world in the last decade. Here's sarin gas on the streets of Damascus.
I think if you were in Assad's position, you would certainly want to hint that bad things could happen if we attack. That's exactly what any government leader would say in a situation like that. But the idea that he would then launch a direct attack on the United States, I think, is fanciful. We should also remember that there is another set of red lines here. You heard that phrase a lot. And that's, of course, not just a quote-unquote an amorphous international norm, but formal international law. We have something called the UN Charter. The UN Charter authorizes states to use force under two conditions, when it's authorized by the Security Council or where they are in danger of imminent attack. Neither of those conditions appears to be present here. So the United States will be going contrary to international law. You know, I'm a realist, and I don't think states should never in any circumstances consider doing things that are contrary to international law. But international law is also not something we should follow when it's convenient and ignore when it's not. And in this case, yes, there's a norm against chemical weapons use, but there's also a norm against the use of force. So we would be violating one norm in order to defend another.
Michael Walzer, what about those competing norms? We heard U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, kind of bobbing and weaving and ducking this morning when NPR's Steve Inskeep asked her if she was essentially willing to see the U.S. break the law to go in without U.N. sanction with use of force in Syria. What about that red line, Michael?
Well, look, I am in favor of strengthening the United Nations so that it could act as an effective agent for the enforcement of international law. But I'm very much against pretending that the United Nations is already that kind of an organization. People who want to go to the United Nations really don't want to do anything because that's what the United Nations will do. Nothing, and nothing is not the right thing to do in this case. Just, I want to respond to the notion of focusing narrowly on these weapons, which I don't think that's what I'm doing. I was in favor of an intervention in Rwanda to stop the killing, where the
weapons were machetes.
Yeah. This is another case.
What about in moral terms? Stephen Walt makes the case that American intervention could make the Civil War worse, could result in more death, not less. If we're weighing death and suffering here, if that's ultimately what lies behind the red line, what about that concern, that argument, Michael?
It might do that. It might not do that. I don't think any of us know enough about what these consequences will be, but one consequence that we can hope for is that it will deter the use of this weapon by this government and perhaps by other governments. I continue to believe that had we responded forcefully to Saddam Hussein in 1988, this other Ba'athist dictator, 25 years later, would not be using these weapons.
Michael Walzer in Princeton, New Jersey, and Stephen Walt right here with me. Please stand by. I want to bring our listeners in, if I may. John in Iowa City, Iowa. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Walter, Stephen. My concern is if we're going to act on compelling moral grounds, then I think we should stand firmly on moral ground ourselves. And that doesn't seem to be our thing. We are killing civilians and children, half as many by drones as were killed in the gas attack, I believe, independent sources would say. These might be considered immoral, certainly illegal internationally. How are we going to act if some nation state or group of nation states decides to punish us for our immoral activities?
So are you saying that the United States doesn't have the moral standing to enforce a moral perspective on chemical weapons?
Exactly.
But if the U.S. wasn't using drones or you name it, then you'd be for it, John?
No, I would not. I think this is an international problem, and it is a regional problem. I don't believe we have any... As a policeman of the world, I think we're simply, and when we act in that way, we're teaching other nations to be helpless. It's learned helplessness because we're so willing to act.
John, I appreciate your call. Michael Walzer, the U.S. is selective in its moral indignation, unqualified by its own checkered record, and teaching helplessness.
Yeah, well, there's no... There's no such thing in political life as a pure moral will. All the actors are morally tainted in one way or another. That can't mean that action is impossible. The United States was an extremely nasty, racist society when we fought against the Nazis, and yet it was a good thing, even for us. The fight against the Nazis. The United States in the course of the Cold War committed many crimes, but nonetheless, it was important to defeat the communists, even if it had to be done by a flawed nation.
Laura's calling from Cranston, Rhode Island. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I feel it's our responsibility to take action in Syria. For 2.5 years, over 100,000 people have been slaughtered, and we just sat there and watched them be killed live. I feel that we've waited long enough. The United Nations has been useless. They've sent multiple delegations. They have done nothing. In fact, Assad has poked them in the eye and committed massacres right in front of them.
Mm.
I feel it's time now to act. We've given him so many red lines that he's crossed and bended, and now it's time for the U.S. or the West or the Arab League, who has also been useless in this situation, to act and take this regime out. Over 40 years of dictatorship is enough.
Laura, I appreciate your call. Stephen Walt, there's that sentiment that how long can this go? Is there no point at which, despite the, you know, really awful heavy lessons of Iraq and Afghanistan and everything else, no point at which the world has to say enough?
The problem here is we have no magic solution to the deep internal divisions within Syria that have led to this civil war. Military power is a very crude instrument, and as I think we have learned in Iraq and in Afghanistan and in Libya, that you can start something, but that doesn't mean that you have a political formula for how to govern these countries afterwards. And it seems to me American military intervention runs the risk of essentially creating a failed state there that would be worse for our strategic interests, but also worse for the Syrians themselves. As bad as things now are, they could always get substantially worse. And the conundrum the Obama administration now faces is if they do something rather modest, a very limited, largely symbolic strike to sort of reinforce this idea of a norm, it's not going to change the political situation or the military situation in Syria. But if they do something really substantial, they really go after the regime, they could actually topple the regime completely and create an anarchic situation within Syria in which many more thousands of people will die. So again, if the caller is motivated primarily by her humanitarian concerns, and that's what it sounds like, we should be pushing for the United States to provide more relief aid to the Syrian refugees, and we should be working very hard with all of the interested parties to try and come up with some kind of diplomatic solution, even though that's hard.
Yeah, if a failed state is your main fear, does that make you de facto a supporter of Assad? That's the argument he makes. You know, after me, the deluge. You know, get rid of me and it's going to be bloody hell here. So don't get rid of me.
No, Assad is a brutal dictator. But sometimes in the world, the alternatives to some kind of state that can keep some kind of order is better than disorder completely. We've seen that repeatedly in a variety of contexts in the Middle East and Africa and elsewhere. So as unpleasant as it sounds for the international community to be taking this regime down when we have no political solution to put in place afterwards, and where we ought to have a realistic sense of what we can actually do in light of recent events, it seems to me the cold-blooded but in some senses also the more moral position here.
Michael Walzer, hit this beehive with a stick and you will create more woe, not less.
Yeah, I certainly recognize the danger of a failed state or a state substantial parts of which are in the hands of Islamic zealots. So I think this should be a calculated and limited military strike, and it should be followed by a very intensive effort at negotiation. But as long as Assad thinks he's winning, as long as Assad thinks that he can do whatever he wants to do in order to win, I think there's no chance of a negotiated settlement.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We've got a top philosopher and a tough geopolitical thinker with us this hour, thinking through, debating Syria and U.S. intervention there. The question of chemical weapons use, the question of intervention, entanglement, many different words being used on that front, punitive retaliation. Michael Walzer is with us from Princeton, New Jersey. He's author of Just and Unjust Wars, professor emeritus at the Institute for Advanced Study, a big thinker about war its consequences, moral behavior on the global stage. Stephen Walt is with me in the studio. He's professor of international affairs at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School, author of Taming American Power, co-author of The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. Lots of response online. One theme that I see a lot of here from our online listeners and respondents, Michael Walter, is why this one? Why this time? William says, why this one now? Why not Darfur then? Which genocide? Which civil war? Which internal struggle fits where on what list? Why this place, Michael?
It's like asking a cop on a highway, since he didn't stop the last speeding car, why is he stopping this one? He's stopping the ones he can stop. Yes, I think we should have acted. Somebody should have acted in Rwanda, and somebody should have acted in Darfur. But missed occasions in the past, that can't mean that we have to miss every possible occasion where military action might be morally necessary.
Is it somehow more important in this neighborhood?
I'm not sure it's more important here than it would have been in Rwanda, where the deaths were, the massacre was on a much, much bigger scale. No, I can't say this is more important, but it seems to me to be very important, and I don't think failures in the past can require us to fail again.
Stephen Walt, do you think geography is coming into play here? I mean, what if it were Mexico instead of Syria where this had been used? You've written about Israel. Is it proximity to Israel that's giving this special moral urgency, the threat potentially somehow to that U.S. ally?
Yeah, I think that has shaped things to some degree, and certainly a number of pro-Israel groups are now pushing. I think the Israelis themselves have been somewhat ambivalent and divided for a couple of years over how to respond to what's happening in Syria, in part because they'd had a pretty good working relationship with the Assad government, and they are concerned, I think, about the possibility of a failed state right next door for all the obvious reasons. But again, I think we have to ask ourselves, is this the kind of case where responding is likely to make things better? It's not a particularly promising thing for the United States to be contemplating military action against yet another Muslim country, particularly when we see how well the prior interventions have gone and the amount of human suffering that has been produced in part, not intentionally, but in part by the actions that the United States has taken in a variety of places. I think it's also useful to sort of view this through the lens of the so-called responsibility to protect doctrine, UN doctrine that people have proposed, suggesting that the international community in some circumstances really does have a moral responsibility. And that doctrine lays out six conditions, and I won't go through them all, but several of them are missing in this case. We don't have the so-called right authority because it's not authorized by the Security Council. It's not clear we have right intention. Yes, we're partly motivated by humanitarian concerns, but we have some other motives as well. It's not clear that this is a last resort. And finally, it's not clear that we have what the doctrine calls reasonable prospects for success. As I said earlier, a small symbolic use of military force is unlikely to alter Assad's calculations if he feels his survival is really at stake. And a large use of military force is going to create more problems than we have already. So if you look at it through that lens, again, this just doesn't seem like a situation where military action is the way to deal with ultimately what is ultimately a very tragic situation.
What would crack your stand on it, if anything, Stephen Walt? What if Assad uses chemical weapons again? Secretary of State Kerry says if we don't intervene, he will. What if it wasn't 14,000 in a day killed by sarin gas? What if it was 140,000, a whole town taken? His father took out of town.
His father did take out of town, and the United States did nothing. In fact, the United States cooperated with the Assad government over the past 40 years, not all the time, but whenever it was in our interest.
But is there a chemical weapons deployment that would make Stephen Walt say, okay, uncle,
right,
we have to go in there?
Obviously, a direct threat to use chemical weapons against the United States or one of its allies, or a use of chemical weapons against the United States. But that would be true if the Assad government started launching missiles tipped with high explosives at American allies in the region or at American forces. So an attack on the United States or an attack on one of our vital interests would certainly get a response from me. But unfortunately, in this case, I think focusing on the chemical weapons use, killing by some estimates 1,000 or slightly more than 1,000 mm-hmm. people in a civil war that has already killed 100,000 people, is not the sudden moment that tips the balance into making this a good idea.
Michael Walzer, Sean writes us online. He says, what about a nonviolent intervention? Is there some other way to go here to leverage Assad away from the use of chemical weapons, even to punish him without military? Americans kind of jaundiced about military deployment, many of them.
Well, there have been people proposing that we should take him to the International Criminal Court.
Of course, that wouldn't be come along, Mr. Assad. He's not likely to volunteer.
Right, right. And the International Criminal Court has no executive agents who can arrest people and bring them to into the courtroom. So I don't think that's an effective option. I do want to say just a word about last resort. That is a criteria of just war theory and of the right to protect, of duty to protect. I've never believed in it. I think lastness is a metaphysical idea. You never get there. There's always something more to do. There's always another UN appeal to the UN or another diplomatic note or another negotiation. Last resort can't be a. It makes no sense. You have to. You use force when you think it will be most useful, even if there might be other things that you could do again and again and again that you have been doing.
How do Iraq and Afghanistan color your view of this, if at all? I mean, it's being put forward sometimes as a moral intervention to punish a red line crossing, but at the same time, many in Congress and certainly some in the White House say it's also about tilting the civil war. So that makes it in some degree parallel to Iraq and Afghanistan, which have had so many civilian casualties, so much woe, so much cost. How does that affect your view, Michael?
Yeah, I listened to bits and pieces of Ed Miliband's speech in the House of Commons, and you know how generals are often accused of fighting the last war. Mm-hmm. He was fighting against the last war and against the last government.
This is in resisting the British Prime Minister's call to right. To green light this.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And there are many people in this country, I think, who are fighting against the last war and against the last administration instead of looking at what is in front of them. I was opposed to the Iraq War. I thought it was unjust, and I didn't want to do it, but I don't think the fact that we did it means that we can't act again in a different way, in a different situation, with different intentions and with different prospects. Historians can look back, and but I don't think that's a great idea for policymakers.
Let's go to David in Franklin, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. So I have a couple of points to make. Particularly, I think that the use of chemical weapons is kind of a false distinction. There have been over 100,000 people killed. I do think that we should intervene. I think we should have intervened when Assad first started killing his own people. I think that those who are like your strategic thinker on the program, mm-hmm. who only want to look at U.S. interests and not really at what's right and wrong, aren't really looking at history. I mean, look at what we've supported so many dictators in the past. How many times has that turned around and backfired on us? The Shah of Iran, you know, turning around and leaving the Afghans in Afghanistan when they were fighting the Soviets. You know, how many times have we done what was supposedly in our strategic interest instead of doing what was right, and we end up much the worse for it? We should do whatever we can to stop Assad from doing what he's doing. I say whatever we can with advisedly, meaning that, you know, we have to do whatever's in our capabilities to have as much impact as we can. Those who are like the strategic thinker, you know, think of it like this. You walk by someone who's beating his wife nearly to death. Do you walk on and say, it's none of my business? You know, there's no police to call in this instance. You know, we're not the policemen of the world. We can't go around to every conflict. Well, we should do whatever we can do based on what's right and wrong at the time, not based on whether or not they're attacking us directly at that moment. Because if we do that, then I can promise you Assad will fall someday through his own people. After killing thousands and thousands more, he will fall. And then what will that new government think of us after we sat on our hands and did nothing while they were being brutally murdered?
David, we've got it. Let me put it to Stephen Walt. I mean, skeptics will roll their eyes, but there has been a strong urge in American history, an urge in you know, at least in the mind, to moral fiber in international policy. And if we let that go, Stephen Walt, you hear David's argument.
Yeah. Well, in fact, if you look at American history, we've tended not to do very much for purely humanitarian reasons. We tend to get involved in military actions when we think our strategic interests are involved, and I think that's right. The problem here is that military power is a very crude instrument, and it's not just our recent experiences in Iraq. It's our experiences in lots of other places, including Afghanistan, including the recent intervention in Libya, which didn't involve boots on the ground, was done with air power, and Libya now is a mess where it's not clear how its political evolution is going to go. So it's easy to say that something bad is happening and we should do something about it, but you have to have both the capabilities but also a strategy and some way of believing that American military intervention will actually lead to a politically superior outcome. The fact is we're not very good at social engineering societies that are deeply divided and that we don't understand particularly well. And the idea that we can either use air power or special forces or whatever and determine who's going to be governing Syria in the future is no different than saying we could intervene, invade with tens of thousands of troops into Iraq and determine its political future, or be in Afghanistan for over a decade and determine its political future. There are, in fact, limits to American military power, and that means there are going to be unfortunate things that happen in the world that we're not able to solve.
But what about our caller David's point that at some point things will change? He sees an eventual fall for Assad. Syrians turn around and look at this country and say, my God, you left us for all those years to be butchered? Even when chemical weapons were used, what does that do to the standing of the U.S. if that's the way history should unfold, Stephen?
I don't think it ultimately will have very much impact on American standing. Our image throughout that part of the world is quite poor, and it's mostly because we are perceived as interfering in a variety of ways in a variety of contexts that most people in the region don't like very much. I believe that if at some point we have a post-Assad Syria, I believe that its government will eventually respond to different incentives. If they want to have a good relationship with the United States and we want to have a good relationship with them, we will work that out at the time. And what we did between 2009 and 2014 is not going to make that much difference.
Rinaldo in Chicago, you're on the air, Rinaldo.
Yes, I'm a veteran of Iraq, Desert Storm, and Somalia. With all due respect on some of your call-ins there, I don't support an airstrike. I want to be clear on that.
Why?
Any type of military action.
Why?
A lot of these civilians call in that never served in the military, and I'd really like to know the track record on what we're supposed to be accomplishing by doing this. I believe the president is an inept president, and I don't see any difference between him or Bush, and all he does is criticize Bush, and he's increased the troops in Afghanistan, and now he's talking about this. So I don't see what the difference is. This is not going to lead to anything positive.
Rinaldo, we've got it. I appreciate your call from Chicago. Michael Walzer, the implication there, and some of what Stephen Walt's saying is, and this is harsher, but forgive me, but that you're kind of dreaming that this kind of intervention doesn't really work and that it creates as many problems as it solves, and, you know.
I agree with much of what Stephen said in his last intervention. Military force is accrued. It's a crude instrument, and there have been many, many failures. There have also been some successes. The Vietnamese marched into Cambodia and shut down the killing fields. The Indians marched into East Pakistan, now Bangladesh, and stopped the killing there. The Tanzanians overthrew the murderous regime of Idi Amin. none of those actions would have been approved by the United Nations. All of them were technically illegal. They fit a phrase of the German philosopher Jürgen Habermas, that they were illegal but morally necessary. And I think that's the case here. I don't favor an effort by the United States to create a new regime in Syria. I do favor intensive push for negotiations, and I think that that a strike limited against in response to the use of poison gas will help, not hinder, that negotiating process.
Stephen Walt, if after all this the U.S. should not go in, what signal does that send to the world? We've called it a moral outrage. We've put the pictures up everywhere. And then we say, but we're not doing anything about it.
Well, if, for example, Congress turns down President Obama, that is the way our system of government is supposed to work.
Yes, but I mean
work.
The bigger right, symbolism right. to the world.
So I think it actually doesn't send that large a message. There'll be lots of things written about how this involves a treat for the United States. But it seems to me to not do something that is not in America's interest, and I don't believe it would be in our interest, tells the rest of the world absolutely nothing about what we would do when our interests are vitally engaged. We will remain engaged.
But we've told ourselves we stand for something.
A number of politicians in Washington and in the Obama administration have said this. The American people have been sending a very different message, which is that they don't believe this is in America's interest or is going to improve things morally.
Stephen Walt, the Harvard's Kennedy School, Michael Walzer in Princeton, thank you to both of you for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.